This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of Safety FM with Jay Allen. I hope everything is good and grand inside of your neck of the woods as we are hanging out on this lovely May the 7th of 2024. So let's talk real quick because today is going to be a doozy of an actual conversation. And let me explain this to you because this is going to be the only way that I can explain it. Today on the show, we have Josh Bryant. And I will tell you, I was down in Australia back in February and got to hear Josh present in this presentation that you'll hear today about Back to the Future. Now, I will tell you, I was a little frustrated when it was all said and done because I was unable to do a post-interview with him. But as the world sometimes aligns and being able to pull things off, I was able to meet up with Josh last week at Energy Safety Canada in Banff. So it was kind of a great thing because once we caught up, I said, can we do something a little strange? And he kind of looked at me for a moment like, hey, strange is my style. And we decided to sit down and do an interview about the presentation that he had done at the Global Innovation Safety Summit that occurred in Wollongong. So we're going to blend two worlds here. We're going to blend Energy Safety Canada's event that occurred in 2024 with the Global Safety Innovation Summit that took place in Wollongong. So here's Josh's presentation. Directly after the presentation, we're going to do a post-interview about what exactly went down in Wollongong. So enjoy both worlds coming together here on Safety FM with Jay Allen.
I was going to say, if I get told, don't fuck it up one more time. Just like yesterday, where there's that confusion that, you know, there's candy and we call it lollies. There's a specific term that we use for the second last talk on the last day of a conference, and it's called a stitch-up. All right, so strap yourselves in. We're going to have a bit of fun. It's going to be a wild ride. But you all looked so amazing after safety stock last night. I'm going to try and lift you up a little bit, all right? I'm going to introduce you to Sebastian, and I'll have to apologise in advance because this may trigger me, but it's cool. So Sebastian, 25, wanted to get a start in the mining industry because that's where the money is. So her partner is Belinda, and they raise miniature dachshunds. So this is where I work, these drill rigs. I've got 100 of them. So the guys were putting this pipe in the ground, and they use a hole plug to lift up the pipe. So they screw in the hole plug, they lift it up, put it into the ground, and as it goes in to change pipes, these large rod clamps on your that side, grab the rod spinner spins the hole plug off the rod, you can pull the hole plug off and then put the next rod on. So that's what they were doing on the day. So what they find with these drill holes, though, is that can get quite, like, torqued up, and they add this stuff called extra tacky grease. It is gross. And they rub that on the outside of the rod as it goes into the ground. So Sebastian on this day was crouched down. He puts these big red gloves on and puts these globs of extra tacky on these gloves, crouches down, and then as the pipe is going past, he's crouched down in the foot clamp area, rubbing grease on the outside of the rod as it goes past. So T would get the hole plug, screw the next rod on, feed it down the hole, and as it's going past down the hole, Sebastian's crouched down with his hands in the rod clamp area, rubbing grease all over the outside, right? So Johnny is watching them do this. They've done it 18 times. They're running 800 metres of pipe down into the hole. It's on night shift. Johnny's looking up, making sure that the winch ropes are functioning correctly, and he's put the foot clamps down and crushed Sebastian's hands. And he's heard a scream. Johnny's heard a scream, and it's made him take instantly his hand off the foot clamp and look down and could see that he had crushed Sebastian's hands in the foot clamp area. We broke every single bone in his hands, and Sebastian described it to me that it sounded like bubble wrap popping. Oh, don't worry. One of my supervisors, Brad, said, put some bubble wrap in your pocket. That'll fuck them up. Right. So before we go forward and talk about this event, I wanted to take you back because there was lots of things that Mitchell Services had shared about what we'd done in our hop journey, etc. And we'd done some good things. I'm like, oh, pop culture. So that quote at the beginning, oh, you know, human performance and that, and this is just all pop culture. I was like, how do I associate that with pop culture? Why don't I associate it with one of the best pop culture movies of all time?
Wait a minute, Doc. Are you telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
The way I see it, if you're going to build a time machine into a car, why not do it with some style?
Right, so we're going to go back, but I'm not going to give you the streaming version or the DVD version or the Laserdisc version or the VHS, not even the Betamax version. All right, I'm going to give you the Josh Bryant version, okay? Now, Adrian and Sam on the drill rig absolutely had a pisser of a time putting that photo together, all right? So we're going to go back.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious shit.
Right, so my talk is in three parts. So I want to take you back first, all right? So to do that, first thing we need to do, because of Cam, you know, we need some technology. I'm going to set my DeLorean clock. So I set my DeLorean clock back to 2017. September 2017, 8 o'clock in the morning. So let's go back. So I'm going to tie everything we did to what we've learned at this conference as well.
Quiet. I'm going to read your thought.
Okay. So, first is building a foundation, right? First thing we learned about at this course was safety differently. The thing that we stuffed up the most, trying to implement safety differently into our organisation, is we called it something. So it looked like a campaign. But what the teaching of Sydney did is actually made us go back and build our own foundation as safety professionals. So really going back and looking at the field guide and looking what others were doing, standing on the shoulders of giants like Campbell Warren and also Kurt, just helped us learn, right?
Election day is your vote for a proven leader. Re-election Mayor Rick Thomas.
Right. So the date is important. On the 18th of July is when I first met Andy Barker, who came out to Australia and was teaching hop. Now, we sometimes call it pump and dump, where you go to a hop course and go, oh, that was really cool, and you go back to work and do nothing with it. Andy actually changed my value set. Like, hop actually really, really resonated with me. And I went back to work so excited and said to my team, I think I've found religion. Like, so... And the other one there is that I've added control save lives. That's the cousin's table at the wedding. You have the control save lives principle. But also in this is I've added a little bit extra there in that we use a no say do framework that Dave Proven promoted to us, is that what do your leaders need to know, what do they need to say, and what do they need to do?
Your destiny.
Right. So, I actually think this photo was taken when I actually talked about hop to my leadership team. So not everyone was on board with this. It was really, really different. And what scared mainly operations is we are a drilling company. We have 25 different clients. And as I say to people, every one of those clients invented safety, they tell us. But every one of those clients do things a bit differently. And if we go in and we start saying all these different things and looking at our people differently and approaching investigations, you know, is that going to be off-putting for clients? Are we going to be too different to them? And I just said, well, I think we actually need to start with us. It actually starts with the leaders and our response. So that response matters is what really resonated with the leadership team.
All right, punk.
Right, supervisors. The frozen middle. So Grizz is one of my supervisors. He could sing Let It Go better than Elsa, all right? Promise you. He's as frozen the middle as the frozen can get. But what these guys were really worried about with being introduced to these new principles or these hot principles was anarchy. You're saying that my guys can do anything and there's no more discipline. I was like, well, is that the best way that you need to control your staff? Someone like Grizz, we introduced internal hop training, and I'd use an example. I'd show some photos from a site of where people had adapted, strapping pump controllers on the side of rigs and using branches instead of, like, you know, broomsticks, etc. And he's like, there is no way I would let that happen on my site. And I said, cool, I took these photos at your site while you're on break. But the supervisors have been the key to our success. They're on board. They can see what we're trying to do. They can see the way that we are trying to learn as an organisation.
Stop, stop, stop. Hey. Oh, I'll get it back to you, all right?
Right. I've really enjoyed seeing large companies like Shell and Rio Tinto saying that we find this just as hard. It's huge. We don't have all this money. We don't have anything. So my company's quite small. So what we did is we tried to change the things in our control. That's the best way to start. We called it the 100 small things. We looked at where are all the touch points and where do we interface with our employees and where can we weave hop language into it. How can we change the way we're communicating? How can we change the way we're responding? And it didn't cost anything. Where do I start? Right. Have a really good look at your systems. What are there to really control risk and what are people using? What is just bloated? I've had shouting matches with ISO auditors. I love them. I'm like, I'm not doing that. It doesn't add any value to the field. It doesn't do anything. We changed our investigations. And one of the best things that we decluttered, there was two. One is we took TRIF away. We took any stat away from our organisation. No one talks about it. Three people in the organisation know what the TRIF is today. Me, the guy who puts it together, and the CEO, and that's it. We don't talk about it. We don't communicate it. Our clients ask for it. Yeah, here you go, but we just don't talk about it. We decluttered. It's like, what's he going to do next? When the Forgeworks map was released, and I'm not promoting one thing over another, but the Forgeworks map was like basically free release, free information, and we love free, right? There's a difference between being cheap. Cheap means you've got money and you don't spend it. I just don't have any money. So when the Forgeworks map came out, what it allowed us to do is set a strategy for our business and what we should focus on. And what it taught us, or I guess opened up to us, is that we are in a high compliance industry in mining, and so are our clients. So the way that we can move our business towards being resilient is through how we are managing work and how we are improving the safety of work. And that's where we became really, really interested in how work is actually done in the field. And we started using technology like 360 cameras and RealWear, trying to bring work into the office and show people what it's like. But we were still asking the wrong questions. We were so focused on control and management, etc., we weren't actually interested in talking to them about work. Five miners in an underground coal mine were nearly fatally killed. It was the biggest near miss. But what it did for the mining industry is open up that you need critical risk management. And because of our clients, we work with tier one down to junior explorers. Not all of them have sophisticated systems, and some really have really sophisticated systems. So we did it ourselves. We needed to create critical risk management within our own organisation, and we worked really closely with the front line in the design, the assessment of the risks, how they were going to be verified, how we would communicate these risks. And what it does is allow us to, we focused on work and the risks associated with work. We don't go out in the field and verify a risk. We verify the critical controls associated with the work. So let's go forward and go back and talk about Sebastian's event. Jump in the DeLorean. Now, part two. Let's talk about this event. How were they meant to do this task? Well, this is what the black line is. This is what we were expecting to happen. To grease these drill rods, what we thought they would do is put the gloves on and stand above the rod spinner, and as the rod went through, they would just stand over it and put grease on the outside of the rod. There's also a guard that goes where the foot clamp area is so that you can't access it. Pretty straightforward. Three people on a drill rig doing the wrong thing. Why did Sebastian put his hands there? Wrong question to ask. How did Sebastian get his hands there? And my boss, the CEO, went, are you serious? That's a task. That's what we ask people to do. That's live work. They put a glove on and the rod goes past and they put their hands over it. I go, yeah. And he goes, that's crazy. And I went, ah, I'll show you something really crazy. To celebrate 50 years of our company, my boss, the CEO, organised some large caricatures to be put up in the boardroom, about a metre tall. This was the driller's assistant one, who's wearing a glove with a giant clump of grease. This task was staring us in the face for years. And then we talk to others, our drilling competitors, and they do it exactly the same way. But we started to introduce this language of what surprised us. Thank you, Lewis Tree, Beth. Yes, we stole it off you and your webinars. So, but this language of what surprised us was what really unlocked learning, right? What they were doing is by putting it through the rod spinner, they were relying on that hole plug. And that hole plug was unknurled, so it didn't have any striations in it, and it was ultra, ultra slippery. So we'd actually given them the wrong component on their drill rig to not set them up for success. Sebastian was brand new to the industry. He'd only been with Mitchell Services for 3 weeks. And so he didn't know how to use that hole plug effectively, but T did. So that's why T was on the hole plug. And they were having troubles with the rod spinner all day, and they'd finally got it to work, and the last thing Johnny wanted to do was to get grease all through that rod spinner and to have to clean it out again. So it made sense that we'll put Sebastian underneath. He's the new guy, and he'll crouch down, and he can rub it on the outside like that. I'm in control of the foot clamps. Nothing can go wrong. But what happened is with Sebastian being crouched down, he actually rocked back to get his balance, and Johnny thought in the corner of his eye that Sebastian had moved and put on the foot clamps. So then you go, okay, how did they get their hands there? That middle picture, and I'm sorry, it's crap, that's the one from the initial investigation, is more like a kick plate than a guard. So when the client's gone, well, the guard wasn't in place, they're thinking this big cage that covers the foot clamps. It's actually not. It's a little kick plate because that rod spinner will actually move up and down and can actually contact the foot clamps. So it's actually there to stop it hitting the foot clamps rather than protecting someone from putting their hand there. It's a crap control. And when we looked at our critical control verifications, it just said, is there guarding in place? What guard? Like, it's a crap control and the verification wasn't very good. And then we get to the training and the procedure. Well, they weren't following the procedure. Clients had said some of our procedures were, there's too many, you got too many procedures. You need to put them together. So we ended up with this process putting together a 19-page procedure. And on page 9, step 37, it says, put the guard in, grease the rods. And that's as detailed as it was. So that's why it made sense for them to do it the way they did, and we didn't set them up for success by allowing them access to that area. It's interesting, we learnt so much from this event about our business, because if we hadn't have done all the stuff before that and prepared everyone for learning and wanting to learn and seeing people as a solution, we wouldn't have asked those deeper questions and we would have went three people just doing the wrong thing. and just moved on.
This is the Jay Allen Show.
If you're anything like me, you have certain tendencies to put things off, such as filing taxes, seeing the doctor, you know, working on that home improvement project that you're supposed to be doing, but you just haven't gotten to it. And while most of the times it works out, the one thing in life that you really cannot afford to wait on is setting up term coverage life insurance. You've probably seen life insurance commercials on TV and thought, yeah, I'll look into it later. Well, the answer is no. This isn't something that you can wait for. Choose life insurance through Ladder today. Ladder is 100% digital, no doctors, no needles, no paperwork. When you apply for $3 million in coverage or less, just answer a few questions about your health in an application. Ladder's customers rate them 4.8 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot, and they've made Forbes Best Life Insurance in 2021's list. You just need a few minutes and a phone or a laptop to apply. Ladder Smart algorithm works in real time, so you'll find out if you're instantly approved. No hidden fees, cancel anytime. Get full refund if you change your mind in the first 30 days. Ladder policies are issued by insurers with long proven histories of paying claims. They're rated A and A plus by AM Best. Finally, since life insurance costs more as you age, now is the time to cross it off your list. So go to ladder.com/safetyfm today to see if you're instantly approved. That's ladder.com/safetyfm, ladderlife.com/safetyfm.
And we are back on the Jay Allen Show on Safety FM.
So these are some of the guards that we've put in today. So part three, let's look at what we do today. We are so fascinated by normal work. That is all we talk about, and we want to know as much as we can. So last 3 months, we had 11,365 12-hour shifts where nothing went wrong, no one got hurt, and 6 shifts where someone sustained an injury. It could be a minor injury. So that means if you look at injury rates, we're safe 99.98% of the time. But what the 4Ds questions that we've implemented after Sebastian's injury has unlocked all these unsafe conditions and where people are having to make do and when they're having to adapt, that this is what's happening when nothing bad is happening. People are having to adapt and make do with this. And what the 4Ds have done is just unlock those in conversation. Creates a lot of work because now we know all this stuff. We go, oh, shit, we've got to do all this. But we can look at it and look at, we can talk to the board about systemic issues, where we need to make improvements. And we're at a stage now with learning that the CEO asked me to run learning teams, that I've actually got leadership asking for them. Can you please run a learning team on this? And the last one we had, which was last week, was attended by our chairman. So the chair sat in with myself, CEO, head of maintenance, and 7 field supervisors. And I started to introduce what a learning team was, and the CEO said, look, sorry, Josh, sorry to cut you off. I know you're going to go over that hot crap and all that. I want to let you know that the chairman, Nathan, and I are here as subject matter experts. That's our contribution. Like, we know around rigs, we can unlock value, but we just want to understand. So the supervisors felt really, really safe with them in the room and actually sharing. They actually did. So I hope you're not laughing going, oh, bullshit. No, it's true. Right, so if you look at surveys of our people, our people in this survey, so I've got 900 staff, so spread out all over Australia, underground, surface, open pit. They feel safe working for us because we're actually interested in their work, and they're proud to work for Mitchell Services. So of the 900 people, we had just over 600 fill out the survey. But that to me doesn't just go, oh, it must be a psychologically safe environment. Psychologically safe environment is where someone like Tim Allen, who's the guy in the photo, this is clever, the Americans love this, his nickname is Binford because of Tim Allen, Home Improvement. Binford were the super-powered put tools. That's Binford. So, you know. So Binford's wife, Jessica, actually got diagnosed with breast cancer, and he had to take time off work. And so we just put it to the organisation. We're quite small, remember. We're only 900 people. We don't have lots of money. And he'd have to take time off work. So we just said, look, you know, if you'd like to donate a day pay or part of your pay towards Tim and their family, it's going to allow them to have time off. And she can receive treatment and he can be there to help kids. And over 75% of the organisation contributed to Tim and his family. That, to me, is a psychologically safe place. I think we got $42,000. And, yeah, Tim just rang me in tears. I went, mate, just go away and get treatment. Go and let your wife get treatment. He then came back, worked with us for a bit, wanted to be a bit closer to home. So he left the organisation and was back 5 weeks later. And he said, I miss just being part of this family. I just feel like it's a safe place for me to work. I didn't want to show this graph, but I need to. So what the purple line is critical control verifications, individual verifications, right? So we implemented it in about August 2020. The pandemic was awesome because it means we did all the performance stands and everything, and then once we were allowed out in the field, we did the verification, so that was cool. So the up and down is because we're seasonal and rigs go on and off. So the purple is when rigs are verified. The little yellow dots are where we've had high potentials. So even though we've got critical risk management, we're still having high potentials. And the black line is our all injury frequency rate. So it's where we've opened the cupboard and you can't fudge it. These are like where we've hurt someone and it's been reported. Doesn't matter what it is, it's all injury frequency rate. So you can see it's gone down with the implementation of critical risk management. And it's not because we did a hands and fingers campaign or some 12 days of Christmas crap. It's because we focused on work and controls. And that's our campaign. That's all we talk about. The only reason that people have stopped getting hurt or the severity rate has gone down is because we've improved work through 4D discussions and improving our controls. And the other number I like that I can't put on this graph is 11 to less than 1%. 11% of people were leaving the organisation because of leadership in their exit interviews, and that's now less than 1% in our business. So I'll finish on this and show you what restoration can look like.
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Hey everyone, it's Seb here. I just wanted to let you know that I'm okay and I'm back working on the rigs. Three things to take away from our presentation. People are going to make mistakes. So do you know if your systems and controls will allow them to fail safely? Be genuinely interested in how the work is actually done. And lastly, always make learning the first priority. We hope that you've enjoyed the Safety Summit in the Gong and travel well.
Thank you.
Okay, Josh. Well, let me set this up because I don't think that this is a fair assessment if I don't tell people what exactly we're doing. So I met you back in Wollongong. You did a presentation on Back to the Future. But right now, that's not where we're at.
No, we're in Banff, mate. We're on the other side of the planet.
We're on the other side of the planet, but I did not have the opportunity to talk to you. And I've been wanting to release that presentation that you did in Wollongong, but I didn't feel that it was fair to do it without something tagging at the back end of it. And I knew that I was going to see you here. So I was like, I'm going to wait. And I didn't want to wait, but I waited. Talk to me about this. How do you come up with this idea of I'm doing a presentation and I'm going back to the future here?
It was funny. It came from a comment from Brett Robertson. And he was talking to someone about HOP. And the leader actually said to him, this HOP and 4Ds and everything, it's literally, what's the term? It's pop culture. Mm-hmm. It's just popular at the moment. And I was like, you know, I get a bit defensive and go, no, it's not. Like, it actually works, man. And so I was like, I really wanted to be an organisation that could, would stand up in front of that crowd and go, we didn't get it right and we really hurt a young guy in our workforce. And I knew that my leadership team would give me the permission to go and share that story. It's important that we share it because we, you know, we're Australian Safety Team of the Year and we've won Contractor of the Year awards, and then we go and crush this kid's hands in this incident. So I really wanted to open with Seb's event, but I was like, how do I tie it in, and how do I take people back to what we did before Seb had the injury and then take them forward into what we've done since that injury? And I had no idea what I was doing. So I sat down watching Netflix with my wife, and there were these, there was a show called Movies That Made Us, and literally Back to the Future was one of them. And we just said, oh, let's just sit down and watch this. And within 5 minutes, I was like, fuck, I've got it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do Back to the Future. I'm going to start with Seb. I'm going to take them backwards and literally use scenes from the movie to take them backwards, and then take them back forwards, and then show them what we do today. Literally stopped watching that show, and we watched Back to the Future, and I sat there with a notepad and I went, I'm going to use that scene, I'm going to use that scene, that, I'm going to use that scene. So I had that idea within an hour and a half.
Well, I mean, how you tied that in together was genius. And I'll tell you, when you were doing the presentation, I started to wonder what was going to happen with Zeb. That was the main thing. And the way that you tied it in, where you did a video that he talks about exactly where you're located, meaning, okay, you're in Wollongong, let me follow through. And I came back. And keep in mind that at this particular point, everybody who's listening to the show has already heard your presentation. So I was amazed on how well you constructed that. Because I'm expecting, guy never made it back, I'm going to get some stock video footage of some story years and years ago. And you're like, boom, here we go. How'd you come up with that?
Seb and I developed a really close relationship basically through the investigation. So when he was injured, he was in outback Northern Territory, and he got flown to a location called Alice Springs. So once he was about to be released from hospital, I flew to Alice Springs and travelled with him the 4 hours back to Brisbane. He had both his hands in casts, so he couldn't really do anything. So I was there to feed him alcohol on the plane, right? So it was so amazing. It was the best flight ever. And when we got it, and I actually flew his partner Belinda out there, out to Alice Springs to see him. And when Belinda was when Belinda was meeting us at the gate of when he came off the plane, I actually thought she was going to punch me in the face. Like, I thought she'd be that angry with the company, but the amount of care in that we showed. So I just developed a really close relationship with Seb. And then after the 1 year anniversary of Seb's injury, and he made a full recovery, right? This is a kid who's crushed both hands against this pipe and crushed like most bones in his hands, right? He's made a full recovery. So a year after the event, I got him into the office and I said, look, can you be honest about, I really don't want you to go, I should have done this and I should have done that on video. I want you to talk to the crews about, you know, your lessons from this and how the organisation treated you. Like, did we treat you with care? And so he just did a really quick 1 minute, you know, I did this and went through this and I've fully recovered. I want to let you know I'm all right. And then the CEO came on and said, we own this event. This is our event. We crushed his hands. We worked hard to understand how this was able to happen. So there was a lot of ownership there. So when I said to Seb, look, I'm going to ask you permission. I'm going to talk at this international conference, basically, and I want to use the learning video that you and I put together. And he goes, yeah. And I said, oh, could I ask a solid? And he goes, yeah. And I went, there's going to be people in that audience who are going to think this is all stock crap and we, you know, oh, we must roll this out all the time. And I was like, how would you feel if I flew up to where you are and we just did a recording on a drill rig? And he goes, yeah, no worries. So I went up to him. I flew up 2 hours and then sat down. And I said, honestly, Seb, look, out of everything we've learned since your event, these are the three big things. And he goes, yeah, that's fair. Like, your people are going to make mistakes. Do you understand normal work? And so I basically said, are you right to go? And he went, yep. And I said, and I want you right at the end to talk to the audience and say, hope you've enjoyed your time in Wollongong. And he goes, no one calls it Wollongong, Josh. They call it the Gong. And I went, mate, use your own words.
Okay.
Right? So, yeah, sorry, long story short, Seb basically got on there and he said, I'm okay. So he purposely, that was him, waved his hands in front of the camera to make sure that everyone could see it. And then he said, I was going to do something corny, like, oh, the first thing I went, nah, man, don't do that shit. So he basically said, you know, I'm okay. He wanted to let the audience know that he was okay. These are the three things that the business learned. And then we really hope that you've enjoyed your time in the Gong and travel safe. Now, the other thing with the Back to the Future and doing that with Seb is I was the second last talk on the last day of that conference. You cannot get up there and do corporate crap and go, look at how wonderful our business is. You need to do something different, right? And I felt I had permission at that conference to do that.
Well, I mean, the level of engagement, and I had never seen you present before to that moment in time, the way that you were able to engage the audience, and keep in mind exactly how you're saying, you're getting towards the end of that conference, and all of a sudden you're there. You have to engage them, and your presentation, I will say, was the most engaging one that I had seen at that conference. And I'm not saying that because you're sitting here, but then today, we're here in Canada, and you do a presentation totally different than the other one, and you know that you already had one that was going to knock it out of the park from what you had in Wollongong, but then you come over here and you knock it out of the park again by doing something entirely different. How did you become so, so comfortable in regards of actually doing presentations and just being okay with it?
Man, I'm the worst. I get so you ask
well, we can talk about the alligator.
We'll talk about the crocodile and my emotional support crocodile that I brought over here, but we'll talk about that in a second. It's a Simon Sinek technique. You need to say to yourself, the last thing you say before you stand on stage is, I'm here to give. It's the last thing you say to yourself, I'm here to give. This is not about me. This is about the audience. So the presentation at Wollongong was for that audience at the time, and I thought it would be a couple of days where people go, look how wonderful we've done, and it wasn't. There was people telling raw stories about, like, this shit's hard. This is really hard to do. But I thought I would be the only one to present, Seb's injury. But the Back to the Future thing was a one-off. That was a one-off. That was for that audience. There's special people to me in the crowd, like, you know, Bob, Andrea, and Conklin. You know, so much respect for them that, you know, they deserve something like Big Bang at that conference. Whereas Energy Safety Canada, what they really wanted was someone who's quite raw to stand up there and show them the practical side of things. So that's how I built that. It was like, no theory. This is how we do it. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a bit Montel Jordan, man. This is how we do it.
Well, I mean, you tried in some words there that I had never heard in another presentation. We'll keep it PG today.
Yeah,
it was really great, and I do appreciate you sitting down with me today in regards to covering over this information. And sorry that it took 2 months, well, really 3 months at this particular portion, but I'm glad that we did this. And I'm going to release this episode, and I'm so excited that we were able to finally do this.
Mate, I'm so glad to have had the privilege to meet you face-to-face twice now, so thanks, dude.
Well, the privilege was mine. I appreciate it.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.